Welcome to Whiskey Cask, cask strength conversation featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 368 for May 6th, 2012. Coming up in a few minutes.
All around about you, you touch it, feel it, smell it, hear it, and it becomes almost part of your DNA.
This is the biggest weekend of the year in the Speyside region of Scotland. It's Spirit of Speyside Festival weekend, and with more than 50 distilleries in the area, there's plenty of spirit to go around. Jim Ryan is the chairman of this year's Spirit of Speyside Festival, and I caught up with him on his mobile while he was on the banks of the River Spey. Our conversation is coming up, along with the calendar of events, the comments of the week, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Whiskey Cast is supported by Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. To join other single malt appreciators for exclusive news, vintage releases, and preferred events, visit glenfiddich.com.
Glenfiddich, skillfully crafted. Please enjoy responsibly.
Let's start off with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Another Irish whiskey is facing changes in the wake of Beam's decision to stop supplying independent bottlers with whiskey from Cooley Distillery. Georgetown Trading Company's John L. Sullivan Irish Whiskey was launched back in 2010. Company owner Amir Pei says the brand will continue to work with other distilleries and will release American-made bourbon and rye whiskeys under a different brand name soon. Brooke Laddie is celebrating another profitable year. The Islay Distillery released its financials this week for the year ending December 31st. Profits were up 19% to £1.4 million, or just under $2.3 million. By the way, you may remember the Viking-style beer barley Brooke Laddie distilled several years ago. That whiskey will be released soon as Brooke Laddie Beer, that's spelled B-E-R-E. There's also a 10-year-old Octomore scheduled for release as well. Meanwhile, the Dalmore is coming out with a new series of vintage releases known as the Constellation Collection. There will be 21 different expressions distilled between 1964 and 1992. The collection will be available exclusively through World Duty Free's airport shops. Also on the travel retail front, Highland Park is launching two new additions in its vintage collection. The Highland Park 1991 will replace the 1990 vintage as stocks run out, while the new 2001 vintage will replace the 1998 edition. Look for them first in Asia, eventually worldwide in travel retail. Meanwhile, the Macallan is releasing the 2012 edition of its 1824 collection, limited release single malt in travel retail. Just 1,824 decanters will be available worldwide. It'll debut in Singapore later this month. Buffalo Trace is kicking off the second year of Single Oak Project releases with the fifth batch of bourbons in the series. This batch focuses on three variables, wheat versus rye mash bills, entry proof into the cask at either 105 proof or 125 proof, and the size of the grain in the oak used for the casks. So far, 60 of the 192 bottles in the series have been released. Look for the next batch sometime in August. There's a change in leadership at William Grant & Sons. Peter Gordon is stepping aside after 4 years as non-executive chairman. His cousin Glenn Gordon is becoming the new chairman. Glenn Gordon is the great-great-grandson of company founder William Grant. Peter Gordon will remain on the board. Grant owns Glenfiddich, the Balvenie, and the Grants blended scotch, just to name a few. Meanwhile, Glenfiddich is planning what's being billed as the world's highest whiskey tasting this week. It'll take place on Thursday, May 10th at 1800 hours GMT. That's 2 p.m. Eastern Time in the U.S. and 11:45 p.m. in Nepal. Why is that important? Well, the tasting will be at the base camp for Mount Everest, where the Walking with the Wounded team of UK soldiers is preparing to try to reach the summit of the world's tallest mountain. Glenfiddich is one of the sponsors of the expedition. There'll be a live stream of the tasting available through several sites on the internet. I'll post links at the WhiskeyCast website. Finally, just down the road from Glenfiddich, the team at Benriach is preparing to put the distillery's old maltings back into operation. They've been working for the last several months to clean up the system after it was shut down 13 years ago, and they may be malting their own barley by the middle of this month. And that's the week's news.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Visit us on the web at glenmorangie.com or download our iPad app at the iTunes App Store. Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well-made.
Before we check the inbox for the comments of the week, just a couple of quick program notes. If you're interested in being on the tasting panel for upcoming episodes of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings, just email comments@whiskeycast.com and put tasting panel in the subject line. Also, it's been a while since our last Q&A episode. If you have a whiskey question that's been driving you nuts, email it to me, and I'll try to find someone to answer it for you. Later this summer, we'll devote an entire episode to answering your questions about whiskey. In the meantime, the comments of the week are brought to you this time around by our friends at Highland Park. Had several comments on last week's interview with Stacy Labs, one of the authors of the Never Cook Sober cookbook. Now, during our chat, I questioned why cooks would want to use vodka in their recipes when vodka isn't supposed to have any taste. Well, some of the foodies in our community quickly clarified that one for me. Ken Goldenberg was just one of several people who explained it this way. Alcohol is, of course, a solvent, as is water, and many foods are highly alcohol-soluble, tomatoes in particular. So adding vodka to a red sauce, just like a Bloody Mary, brings out the depth of flavor in the tomatoes. In a pie pastry, usually made of flour, fat, and water, alcohol, again usually vodka for its neutral flavor, aids in making the pie crust more flaky by doing two things. In making a pie dough, you need enough water to bring the dough together so that you can roll it out. But too much water will form too much gluten, which you want kept to a minimum in a pie dough, else it becomes tough. However, alcohol does not cause the dough to form gluten, so it keeps the dough moist enough to roll out without making it chewy. Secondly, alcohol brings down the evaporation or boiling point of water, so moisture escapes quicker from the crust as it bakes, therefore making it more flaky. Now then, since any spirit would work, can you just imagine a pecan pie made with a crust that had bourbon in it? Oh yeah. Well, thank you, Ken, and thanks to everyone else who helped explain it to me. Meanwhile, Dave Crokert sent me this message. Mark, during your piece on cooking with spirits, you mentioned vodka not having any flavor. While that's correct about the big brands, you as a spirit expert should be aware there are grain vodkas from Eastern Europe that positively burst with flavors. Check them out. Usually whiskey drinkers like these kind of vodkas as well, this being one of my faves. And Dave included a link for a Polish vodka that's made with bison grass. I've added that link to the WhiskeyCast Facebook page in case you're interested. And I do have one correction to add to Dave's comment. I am not a spirits expert by any stretch. I wish I had time to learn more about other spirits, but just keeping track of whiskeys from all over the world keeps me pretty busy. If you have something you'd like to share, you can always post it on our Facebook community page, or just email me. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com. And the comments of the week are brought to you this time around by Highland Park.
Hello, this is Jerry Tosh of Highland Park, the makers of the best spirit in the world. If you'd like to go onto the WhiskeyCast website and click on the banner, then it'll take you to the inner circle and sign up, and we'll send you as much information about Highland Park as you'd ever need to know.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Anton Sweeney, spirit store foreman, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
What I like about Redbreast is so smooth, mellow, and just after one or two, you just kind of go into a state of a tranquility. I suppose you could say most breasts need a bit of a lift, but this breast gives you one hell of a lift.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know, know Redbreast.
Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's U.S. chapter has its final single malt extravaganza of the spring this Thursday night in New York City. The Spirit of Toronto Festival is this coming Saturday, followed by the Stratford Whiskey Festival in England on the 19th, Whiskey Live Singapore on the 21st, Springbank's Open Day on the 24th, Whiskey Live Dublin on the 26th, and Whiskey Live Australia in Melbourne on June 6th. Also down under, the Australian Single Malt Tasting Championship is June 15th in Sydney. Woodford Reserve's final Bourbon Academy class of the year is June 16th in Versailles, Kentucky. That's also Auchentoshan Distillery's Open Day in the Glasgow suburbs. Those are just a few of the events coming up over the next several weeks. You'll find a full list at the WhiskeyCast website. And it's brought to you by Laphroaig, which is celebrating the 18th year of the Friends of Laphroaig with a contest to create the official Friends of Laphroaig tartan. You'll find the details at laphroaig.com, along with how you can become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay.
WhiskeyCast is supported by Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. In 1886, William Grant set out to fulfill a lifelong ambition, to make the best dram in the valley. Today, a rarity in Scotland, Glenfiddich still remains independently owned by the fifth generation of the same pioneering family. This unique legacy of skill, passion and pride forges a long-term commitment to creating truly great single malt without compromise. Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. To learn more about our award-winning range and join other single malt appreciators for exclusive news, vintage releases and preferred events, visit glenfiddich.com.
Glenfiddich, skillfully crafted. Please enjoy responsibly.
WhiskeyCast In Depth is brought to you by Isle of Jura. Whiskey lovers from around the world are in Speyside this weekend. I'm not just saying that. The Spirit of Speyside Festival's Facebook page had a request for help finding a room for a woman from Colombia coming in for the festival. Now, distilleries, Speyside has plenty of. Hotel rooms, not as many. But that's part of the charm of Speyside. Jim Ryan is the chairman of the Spirit of Speyside Festival this year. I caught up with him this week during final preparations for the weekend. In fact, he was on the River Spey during our chat. Since you're on the banks of the Spey right now, tell me what you're doing to get ready for the festival this weekend.
Well, the particular reason for us being here at the moment is that one of the feature events on the Sunday of the festival is that we fly the flag up the Spey Valley, taking the flag from the venue of the opening dinner, which is tomorrow night at McAllen, up to a point in the Spey where effectively we're taking the metaphorical spirit back to the river. And that will then be handed on to the host venue for next year's event. And it's something we started 4 years ago. So we'll have about 30-odd horses that will be going up through the villages and communities, flying the flag and reminding people the importance of such an event.
And let's talk about the event. The kickoff event is the awards competition, the finals of the awards, and also the Spirit of Speyside dinner, right?
That's right. And included in that this year for the first time is the graduation ceremony for all the students at our International Spirit of Speyside Malt Whiskey School. And we've got 60 students who are currently working in the program. It's a three-day program. And they will all graduate at the just before the dinner tomorrow night. And at the start of the dinner, with pipers and all of the atmosphere, they will march in and take a bow in front of the 350 guests who will be inside the filling hall at McAllen Distillery.
Now, this is really sort of the big event in Speyside in the entire region for the entire year, pretty much, right?
Yep, it is. This is worth anything between $750,000 and £1 million to this area over a period of about 5 days in terms of its economic impact.
And in terms of economic impact, the entire whiskey industry is really the main driver in the entire Speyside Valley, right?
It's one of the key economic drivers in terms of the exchequer. The exchequer are delighted about it because it, in terms of the geographical region, it produces a disproportionate amount of revenue for the government from a very small area. We have 50 distilleries within about 20 miles of each other in the Spey Valley here, and they're generating a very, very significant amount of tax revenue to government. We don't complain about that. We're glad that we have this magnet, if you like, to allow the rest of the world to come and share the joys and pleasures that Speyside can produce.
What is going on this year that's new for the visitors who are coming into Speyside?
Well, the call was to try and refresh the program, so we've been doing that. And when people are here for 5 days, there are only a certain amount of tastings that your palate will tolerate. So we're looking for alternative interests to share with our visitors. And in that case, we're looking at the south of the Spey Valley, down in the Aviemore and Badenoch region, and that's being introduced for the first time. And some of the kind of features of that will be safari suppers, where they will go around various eateries in Granton and Spey, and whatever course they're on, they will have a paired whisky to go with it. And similarly, we've got a quite spectacular coastline here in Murray. It's regarded by the National Geographic magazine as being one of the top 20 coastlines in the world. We want to show the world that and allow them to experience some of the features of the coastline. So here we are sitting just about 2 miles out of Aberlour, and we're only 20 minutes from the coast here. So guests who are using Aberlour or Craigellachie or Dufftown as a base for the festival can pop down to coastline as a bit of relief from not relief, but an alternative to the actual inland area, and see the dolphins as they frolic around the Murray Firth.
A chance to freshen the palate, so to speak.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, whether you do it with seawater or not, it's a different story, but point taken.
Now, this really has grown over the years to become one of Scotland's biggest festivals, right?
It has. It started in 1999 with a group of enthusiasts just getting together and wanting actually to celebrate the good fortune of living and enjoying the produce of this area. And it grew steadily. And then in 2006, I think it was, it became a company limited by guarantee because we benefit from the investment from Event Scotland and the Highlands and Isles Enterprise Economic Development Organisation. So we need governance arrangements around that are appropriate. And we then started to take off in building the brand, and we think that's been really quite successful. And myself and the board are pretty charged in terms of trying to future-proof it and think, well, what is the visitor looking for now? And we do a lot of consumer research or visitor research on that one, and keeping refreshing the program. And we've got a three-year plan to keep doing that and remind the world this is the home of malt whisky, but it's also one of the most environmentally attractive parts of Scotland.
Especially with the river running through the entire region, and I've had the chance to walk along the Spey before, and it's just absolutely beautiful. Even at this time of the year, in early May, the leaves are just starting to come out, and it's really starting to get green, right?
It is. I wish I had a video cam here that you could see it. There's that early bud that's broken, and that the richness of the green and shininess of it. It's a beautiful day here today, I've got to tell you. And the river is producing the background music to this particular show that's on this afternoon, and you can get quite theatrical in terms of how it looks and feels.
Let's get aside from whiskey for a bit, because you're not in the whiskey business yourself. I know you run a butcher's shop in Elgin. Tell me what this festival means to the business community and the regular retail community in Elgin and all the little towns up and down the Spey.
Well, let me illustrate that best by telling you what we have calculated over time is the average spend of a visitor who's coming here and staying overnight. And it's £327 per person per 24-hour stay. So that gives you an impression of the investment that's being made in their accommodation, in the food offering that they're using, and in gifts and services that they use when they're here. So in terms of the Spey Valley itself, it's really important, really important. And what we're trying to do is not stretch the festival, but stretch the philosophy into the whole tourism market, and remind the world that whilst the festival is a unique event to come to, actually there's an all year round offering here that that can allow people still to do the distilleries, but a lot more for buy.
Now, you've lived in this area all your life. Tell me about growing up in Speyside and maybe riding a bicycle past the distilleries when you were a young boy. Tell me about growing up out there.
Well, I was born and brought up in Elgin, and the house that we lived in, a family home, was about 400 yards from the Glenmurray Distillery. So my sense of smell was influenced quite a bit by the smell of draft, which, as you know, is a byproduct of whiskey. And I can smell that distillery now. And I can always remember, too, as a youngster, we used to buy all our turkeys for the Christmas market from the farm that was effectively the farm of Craig and Moore Distillery on Ballindalloch. And going there, one of the things I always remember was that when we go up to collect these turkeys, it was usually a very cold winter's morning, maybe 2 weeks before Christmas. The first thing we did was go into the kitchen of the farm, sit down and have a cup of coffee, and my father always got his dram, even though it was 10 in the morning. And these are very vivid memories. And all around about you, you touch it, feel it, smell it, hear it, and it becomes almost part of your DNA.
And it really is a great place to visit any time of the year, right?
It is. I mean, each season has its mood. And I think one of the things that either locals, if they remember to do, or visitors particularly acknowledge, is that, you know, clarity of air, you know, that genuinely natural environment that we have up here and take for granted until you go down to London and realize, you know, just what it is that it's like to live in big urban communities. And the desire of a lot of people to actually come and settle up here is testimony to that.
What's the most underrated thing that a first-time visitor to Speyside should do or visit that not even the locals would think of, that you, having grown up there all your life, would recommend for a first-time visitor to Speyside that's not in any of the tourist guides, that's not in any of the any of the websites or anything, but what should somebody do who's visiting for the first time?
Well, you know, let's say that they're coming here for the first time and whisky is the hook that we've caught them on. Without doubt, the first place that we take any visitors who come to us for the first time from wherever they come from in the world or even in the UK is an old Benedictine abbey in a valley that's just outside Elgin called Pluskerdon. And this abbey was built in 1238, I think it was. And it thrived until the Reformation, when the monks got the heave-ho, and lay derelict until 1948, when a group of six Benedictine monks came back and re-established a community there. And there are now 26 of them. And it is probably one of the most remarkable places in the world I've ever been in. And it's because of its unspoilt nature and just that sense of place. And we describe it as the alternative spirit of Speyside.
Wow. Now, without showing any favoritism to any of the distilleries, what's the distillery tour that people should take that most often might be underrated, that might not be on the radar?
That's a really interesting one, because, you know, there's not one. It's that simple. What there is something for all tastes, and I use the metaphor as well as the literal piece here. You can go to Glenfiddich, which is, you know, a highly professional, well-delivered, and a tour that's taken by thousands. You can go to Macallan, where there are certain unique elements to the tour that you wouldn't get in Glenfiddich, but it's their own story told in their own way. You can go to Aberlour, where it's a small distillery nestled almost under the armpit of Aberlour itself. It's hidden away so well, and it's incredibly personal and intimate and interesting. And then you can go over to Forest of Ben Roenick, which is a unique, almost boutique-type distillery, which was mothballed for, I think, about 20 years, and then bought by a local family company, and it rose like Phoenix from the ashes, and it only has a staff of three. And if you want intimacy, that's what you get at Ben Roenick.
So there really is something for all tastes. If you want, and when you go to Ben Romick, you might be getting one of the distillery workers taking you around.
You will. Yeah, you will. And it might even be the manager. You know, and it doesn't come more authentic than that.
What are you planning ahead for next year? Since it's obviously going to be kind of late for people to get here for this year's festival or get to Speyside for this year, what's the plan for next year?
Well, if somebody was coming for next year's program, they just need to look at this one. And what that will tell them is that that's the beef of the program. You know, we don't dramatically change a program. It's subtle. Your things will drop off because, you know, they haven't been particularly well attended, and something new will come on to it. But I stand down after this festival, so I've got to say that that responsibility will be handed on to someone else and working with the board. But the plan is there, constant refreshment. I mean, we've taken in new pieces this year into it. There's an old woolen mill that was originally built in 1734, I think it was, and it lay empty for a lot of years. It's been restored with a very substantial lottery funding grant. It'll be open and running for the festival this year. And it's little things like that that crop up that doesn't make a dramatic change to the program, but it very subtly reminds people that we're always looking for that kind of quality edge to the product that we're offering, and it'll be more subtle than dramatic.
And there's something new if you come back from year to year. You'll find something different to do.
Yeah, and we will have alerted the regular visitors, some who have come year after year. The regular visitor, they will notice that in the program because the front page of the program will be highlighting the kind of new for this year badge. And if you go through the program, you'll see flashes that say new for this year. So that introduces the browser very quickly to what's fresh.
While it's too late to make it to Speyside for the festival this year, the Autumn Speyside Whiskey Festival in Dufton is September 27th through October 1st, and next year's Spirit of Speyside Festival will be on the first weekend of May, as always. WhiskeyCast In-Depth is brought to you by Isle of Jura. Visit the Jura website at isleofjura.com and learn how you could win a bottle of Jura Superstition. The What I'm Tasting This Week department is brought to you this time around by the Glenrothes. Last month, we heard from Jay Harmon of The Notch on Nantucket Island during our coverage of Whiskey Live New York. He was unveiling the first 10-year-old version of The Notch single malt that night. It was created with help from retired Highland Park and Glenrothes malt master John Ramsey. I tasted a sample of it this week. It was bottled at 46% ABV. The nose is smooth, malty, grassy, and light with a slight nuttiness and a hint of peaches. The taste is smooth and fruity at first with a good cinnamon spiciness that builds up quickly, then fades out slowly to reveal hints of peaches, pears, and raisins. Those same notes linger into the finish, which is long and smooth and has a good consistent touch to it. I'm scoring the Notch 10-year-old an 88. Finally got my hands on some Amrut Porto Novo from India. This was unveiled last fall and is in short supply. It's bottled at 62.1% ABV. It was first matured in ex-bourbon casks, then transferred to port pipes for a while, then back to bourbon casks for some final maturation. The nose has no burn to it, despite the high ABV. It's sweet with notes of red grapes, raisins, plums, and hints of ginger and brown sugar. The taste is thick, nectar-like, and spicy with cinnamon, ginger, honey, and raisin notes. Those notes carry over into the finish for a nice, long, consistent dram. I'm scoring the Amrut Porto Novo a 91. The What I'm Tasting This Week department is brought to you by the Glenrothes, where maturity matters, not age. You'll find my tasting notes in the free WhiskeyCast apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android, and at the WhiskeyCast website. That's also where you'll find links for our Facebook page and my Twitter feed, the calendar of events, Father's Day gift ideas in the photo gallery and print shop, and in the WhiskeyCast store powered by Amazon.com. And, of course, a complete archive of past episodes. You'll also find links for our WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings Monthly podcast and WhiskeyCast HD video episodes, too. The address is WhiskeyCast.com, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast is supported by Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. To join other single malt appreciators for exclusive news, vintage releases and preferred events, visit glenfiddich.com.
Glenfiddich, skillfully crafted. Please enjoy responsibly.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2012, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.